This is Ron Whaley, and you're tasting Talking Schmidt.
Hey,
Talking Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
All big dogs in. What do you think, Dolan?
John? Schmidt?
Talking Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talking Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talking Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith. Yeah!
Gregory.
Yes, we are.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
Was there any like early tours that were like super impressionable, like in your early days where you're like, man, this one I'll always remember, or like bonding with dudes or hecticness, like getting to Europe for the first time maybe, or
probably like 10.
Yeah, you know, of
like
course.
Throughout all the different years of just like amazing ones. The first one that came to mind is that one with Roscoe, because we did Midwest with him. Yeah. And I think it was just me. I think Greg Kizik was with us, and then maybe one of the other SoCal Sims writers too. But it was just like, you know, I could see why he made the headliner on all that stuff. So like nobody knew who we were. They're like, uh-huh. That nobody knew of. And then anything with all the like Tim and Israel ones, there was a good one with Kendall and Tim and Israel and Thomas Campbell and Ryan Ann Gallen. And we went to, it was the first time I ever went to Europe.
And so
okay, here's one from that trip. First place we go to is that Northampton contest where Tom Penny's Discover, and I talk about Phil Shaw. Oh. Phil Shaw thing. So my first, it was back when there's no 7-Elevens in Europe or anything like that. We get off the plane, we finally like make it to Northampton out of London, just zorged, and we get in to go to our hotel, and we walk past this pub, and I'm like already nervous because it's like I'm seeing like hero skaters out here, like oh my god, did you see who that was? Like,
yeah,
like don't sweat, like I gotta skate against these people like tomorrow or whatever, and this is bizarre. And somebody even told us we're gonna go out tonight, we're gonna go to the pubs, and people were like, be careful. It's like, what do you mean? Like they like to fight here. I was like, oh, okay. And so we're walking, still daylight, and we're walking towards the hotel, and we walk past this pub, and no joke, Ed Templeton is there, and he's holding the neck of this dude against the sidewalk, and he's basically trying to hold the blood in the dude's neck. The dude had gotten to some bar fight, and this was like a random British guy, and somebody broke the pint glass and stabbed him in the neck. He went outside and like was basically like dying out in front of this pub.
Fuck. And
Ed being Ed, of course.
Yeah.
Save the guy, you know, like it wasn't just, a lot of us were just like, what the hell is it? You know, just keep walking by or whatever. And it was just like Ed's trying to like clamp his neck down and keep the blood in him.
Fuck.
I think from what I heard, I don't know if the dude made it, you know, like they weren't sure, but it didn't sound like he did. Ed would know.
Yeah.
And then the next day we go to that, you know, is it Northampton or Southampton? I always get that wrong. People get mad at me. Like it might be Southampton.
South? Okay. I thought it was north, but I don't really know.
Yeah. Anyway, the famous contests back in 1994 or 3, where like Tom was discovered basically, because that was his park, and we all went to his park and got to see him do what he does. It was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the first time you see Tom Penny, you're pretty impressed, right? Fuck.
Yeah.
There's some guys that, I mean, there's a lot of guys like that, but there's some guys that are just like, it's just a notch above, like, you know, everybody's great, but then there's some guys that are just like, holy shit. I remember seeing Tom, for some reason, that footage at the Huntington Park always sticks out where he's just floating around, just frontside flipping, and just like, he kind of, in a way, Phil had the same vibe where it was like, I'm not trying hard and I'm doing good stuff.
Yeah. When I first got on like Etneys or something. I basically went to Huntington to go visit somebody or to go, I don't know, maybe to like do some Etneys thing or whatever, and went to the Huntington Beach Park. I think it had lights or just enough light. And I went there, I can't remember who with, but it was just me and another friend. And Tom Penny rolled up and it was like kind of dark. And he like, I don't want to, you know, he just was doing his thing. It wasn't a demo, but it was so insane.
Yeah.
You know how, first of all, if you don't know what park we're talking about, this park sucks.
Yeah.
It's like a sandbox of like a skate, like compared to any park you think that sucks now. Like this park was awful, right? And tiny. It all had this little brick wall that surrounded. And yet somehow he was going so fast through the place, the super steep banks and like nollie backside flipping over him. But at one point he just was like hauled ass towards the flat bar. And I was like, why is he going at the flat bar sideways? And he nollie flipped it and landed and still like carved. Again, like you have to know that park or whatever. Like it's like the OG flat bar. Every 4-on-1 had that park in there, right? So.
Yeah, I mean everybody lived right by there. When you were skating on Santa Cruz, was Kendall still pro for Santa Cruz at that time?
When I was on SMA, he was pro for Santa Cruz because we went to that Bricktown contest in New Jersey, or also the one that's at the. What are those banks called? The Brooklyn banks.
Brooklyn so banks.
It was going to be a contest, and then it just turned into some wild demo. But I remember being in the van with Knox, Kendall, probably Jaya, and it was that same Bricktown one where Cardiel did the 540 on that vert ramp without pads and really like made his name.
Oh, that was Cardiel's padless. That was the first five he did, and he was padless.
That was that Bricktown one, or at least the first one that was like, I remember seeing
in a video.
I remember thinking that he had learned it, was learning it then.
Yeah, I think so. It sounds right.
Huh. So I'm with Tim, this classic early in the game story. It's 1992 and I'm with him and always like the worst idea. Like I'm already, like I told you, I get nervous at contests. Like I don't like that, like whatever. Like it's something you just have to do.
Yeah.
And so I'm already like nervous about my run. And he's like, hey, you want to go like, we're going to smoke weed with these guys. Do you want to come with me? And I was like, oh, hell yeah. Like just bad idea. Like, let me just get more paranoid. And it's, we like go out the door and it's with Coco and Sheffy.
Oh.
And I just remember being like, wow, yes. Like, first of all, like now I'm getting baked and now I'm getting nervous. And I was like, that's Sheffy and that's Coco. Like, wow. And that's how Tim was. Like, Tim was friends with everyone. That was one of the coolest things about Tim was, like, the FTC dudes seemed to like him for some reason, which surprised the hell out of me. Like, because Tim was such, like, a ramp, ATV, jean shorts type of, like, everyman kind of guy. And like, I want to say, like, remember the Sacramento contest when Simon Woodstock and when they're riding the skimboards or whatever, I remember like there was two sections of pro skaters. There was like the cool guys in the white shoes, girl and FTC people, chocolate girl. And then there was like the rest of us over on the other side. Right.
Yeah.
And somehow like Tim like transcended that. Like he could be like, everybody liked him.
Yep. He was very personable and he was just like always happy, like smiling and friendly. So it was, I don't know. It was, but I mean,
you know what you're getting too. It was like the dude straight up.
Plus he was kind of the guy for what he did. It was like, you know, like he was doing a lot of blunt variations and stuff before. I mean, he was kind of known as the blunt guy back then for a minute. And so people were probably just stoked to see his style of skating.
Yeah. And just the, you know, infectious on how much loving it rubs off.
When does the kickflip stale grab come in? Like that's kind of the moneymaker.
I would say it was the kickflip melon first.
Oh, okay.
That one got me going, which is funny because shout out Michael Bryan.
Shout out.
Love you guy. He told me I would never make it with kickflips. And I remember like every time I did a kickflip melon over some pyramid at a contest or whatever, just being like thinking of him like there was a Tampa 95, I remember doing kickflip lean over a hip. And it was funny because this is something like, it's a, like No Complies, it's a Matt Hensley trick from 4 years before Kickflip Melon had already been like done, like all of them. But I think when I started doing it again, it was more like people were starting to do kickflips like high and catch them high. And that made it easier for me to grab it and then you could do more or whatever. And then I went to some, that Tampa Pro, and I think I learned like hard flip indies grabs after that.
I'm not claiming.
And then later kickflip stale fish, like front side. That was a cannery thing. I think I learned it at the cannery on the
day. Oh yeah, that makes sense. Over the hip.
Yeah. And then I think basically when the kickflip melon worked out for me and I realized this was like, oh, I can rehash this old thing and like, you know, kind of give myself uniqueness. And then, you know, it also worked for contests and stuff. So after I figured out that one, then I remember learning frontside shove it, frontside grab, and also hard flip frontside grab, and then wanting to do, and then kickflip stale fish eventually too. And it was stuff like a lot of people would do kickflip indies and stuff, and it'll be way away from your feet, right? I always tried to like get it on my feet and then grab. So it was kind of like evolution.
Mm.
I'm thinking about Gershon right now.
I just saw him a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, hadn't seen him in forever.
My kickflip grabbing guys from that time, I want to shout out Gershon.
Shout out.
And Mako Urabe.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But he had the 360
flip. Mako 360 out. Flip Benihana, right?
Yep. That was his. Israel and Charlie Wilkins, classic heel flip indie dudes, right?
Yeah.
That was a good heel flip indie. And that was, yeah, probably most of it.
Yeah, some people do it like I think Omar calls it the money grab, right? Where it's like kind of away from you and then you put it under. And then some people kind of do the opposite where it's like more the kick flip and then the grab is secondary. You know what I'm saying? Like one of them kind of goes out, like you were saying, and the other one's just like already under your feet.
I think that's why I got excited in doing it again too, because when I learned it like that, I was with shooting some sequence with Kendall and Israel. And I remember trying to kickflip over like, you know, one of those like warning barriers that has like a little like orange light on top, whatever, off this bank, and trying it. I was like, wow, this would be like the biggest kickflip I ever done, but I couldn't quite keep it on my feet.
Mm.
And then I tried one grabbing and it ended up like doing the kickflip bigger and then like boned out all crazy. And it was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, what's this? Like, it's a new thing.
You're taller than most people on skateboard. Like, were you a fan of like Neil Blender and some of the other big guys? Like, did you think along those lines, or was it like, no, I'm just looking at skaters as skaters? Like, I'm wondering if there was anything like that was a little more difficult for you or a little easier for you because of your height.
As far as like actually like tallest, I think it's me, Sean Payne.
Oh, and yeah.
Dr. Hill are all 6'7". I might be
Sean right Payne on. Was a lanky tall guy, yeah. Too. That guy ripped on a skimboard. He was,
wow. I didn't,
yeah. He's a Hawaii guy.
He was so good. Yeah.
Mm.
But I remember like, well, it definitely, I think, gave me a career, right, as a pro skater, because it made like uniqueness. And like, I kind of realized that was like part of the gimmick. But then people would always ask me about that and they'd be like, wow, is it hard to skate being tall? And I was like, ever since kindergarten, I was in the back of the photos. Like, I don't know anything else than what it is to be like the tallest kid in the class, or, you know, weird and lanky. I say more so it was like getting compliments from skaters I looked up to that were just like, hey, for like a tall skater, like I like watching it. I was like, wow, thanks. You know, like that helped.
Yeah.
But I know what Tony's like. Tony Hawk's 6'2 or 6'3. Right? Mm-hmm. I always was a big fan of Kenny Hughes.
Oh, yeah.
Or, but he was like a.
He's
a
lot diesel, though. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Shoulder 6'4. So, that, you know, I don't think I really like had that many people to like kind of like look up to in that way, you know, because they just weren't really. I didn't think about that with Neil. like with Neil, it was more like kind of like looked up to him just for like the Neil vibe.
I love Mr. Neil Blender, man.
I knew I was like stoked on Ben Schroeder because he was Ben Schroeder's up there, like six something. I can't even think about who I would have like paid attention to during that era. I probably would have like, I was a big Jeff Phillips fan and had right. like, you know, I've been a little younger or him like live a little longer. Although, thankfully, he's got footage you can see. You go back to some of those like Houston videos.
Mm-hmm.
They made like, there's a sick ass Bad Boy Club video out there that he's got a bunch of stuff in. Right?
Yeah. And he usually had a section in almost every contest video.
Yeah. Oh my God. And he was amazing. I think he was up there too. He was probably like 6'3" or something.
I think Jake used to say that he was the only guy that could do a McTwist out of an invert, like an invert on one wall and the next wall do a McTwist.
Which, yeah, probably a lot of leg power.
And yeah.
He, you know what? Like he looked Texas strong too. Like he didn't wear much clothing either. Right? Uh-huh.
They always had the Hasoli well, shirts.
Bad. Yeah, he looked good in that. So he must, in order to be that tall and look that good in that gear, he must have been kind of ripped, you know?
Mm. What is, do you remember the situation for the Thrasher cover?
Yes, man. So I didn't have a car at the time. Bryce calls me and he says, do you want to shoot tomorrow in the city? I was like, yeah, or you know, what, yeah, what's up? And he was like, well, it might be for the cover, which is crazy that he actually said that.
Right? Yeah, that doesn't get said much.
No. Offered like Thrasher, and but I by that time, thankfully, I knew the importance of it. And I remember not having a car, and I was like, I'll be there. And I like woke up at 5 and took the whatever the bus to the Caltrans because you got to take a bus from Santa Cruz to San Jose,
yeah, and then the train.
And he maybe met me at the train station. And it was also, he also told me it was like, it's going to be the jump ramp issue. He didn't tell me anything about Skater of the Year. That was Chris N's Sony cover that I was getting.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that is the only thing I didn't know. He told me it was going to be the jump ramp issue, and he told me I had a chance at having the cover. And I was like, I'll be there. And so we shot. He's like, do you have anything in mind? And I was like, what about like putting the jump ramp up to like a garbage dumpster? And I'll do something on, you know, the edge of it. And I did a backside 5-0 and a back tail on one of those ones that's like 5 feet off the ground and just that lip and you could fall inside the thing, right? So it was scary. And I remember being stoked. Like I said, I was going to do this thing. I went up there and I did it. And I think that footage is in, I just don't know the name of what that Thrasher video is, you know, because it was in the time of like.
Was it an early one, right? It was probably like Truth Hurts or. Maybe 911.
Yeah, it had a crazy name. It was maybe even before those, like, it was maybe even before the ones that had like the article names. It was like, maybe it was like before 911. It's an early 90s one.
Okay.
Because I've been wondering where that footage is because, right?
Who filmed it, Safa?
We did the dumpster stuff. I don't know. We went and did that dumpster thing, and I'm like happy. You know, I was like, man, if I get. Whatever, if this cover or no, like I'm happy about like a jump ramp back tail and like a one of those like tall dumpsters. I was like, hell yeah. And then he's like, well, do you want to go out to the sunset? And there's like, I know of like this car that like you could jump over. And I was like, okay. You know, I was like, that's, you know, I'll do that. Like, absolutely. I'm here to do what you asked me to do. Like, I understand the, you know, opportunity.
Yeah.
But in my head being like, what I think I could do something better than just like jump ramp over a car, you know, like it was like a little 1-2 and it was off the curb.
Uh-huh.
And that's what ended up being the cover, of course, was like jump ramping over the car.
Bang, bang, niner gang.
At the time being like, oh, why didn't they use the dumpster one? And then, but just like so thankful to even have a cover. And it's like the picture he took, the board's looking clean. There's Skateworks, Crux, absolute, like I got like,
photo incentive.
Excellent photo incentive from that one, from like everybody involved. It was very clear.
Yeah, man. Those are the moments when you get like, you know, you get your sticker job and it works out, and then all of a sudden you get ching ching.
And then I just remember riding the train home again after that and being very like satisfied with like whatever happened. Like I did what I was supposed to today. And like, you know, at that age, I don't think people understand. Well, I mean, whatever, people totally understand, but to like sacrifice like your social life entirely and just like anything, any plans I had to do tomorrow, like friends, whatever, like, sorry guys, like, I'm just gone. Like, I'm going to go do this fucking thing and like, hopefully get a photo.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I had like a ton of footage in my career enough, but like making friends, making good like relationships with photographers, I think helped me out a ton.
Especially in that era, photos were so, I mean, getting in the, you know, in the mag is like, is a big deal. And especially when, I mean, ads are cool, but non-ads are even cooler. Like you get some like content page or you get like an article and you get a full page in that or something. And then if you're lucky enough to get a cover or the back cover, there's only like, I think, four people in the history of Thrasher that have had the front cover and the back cover. I know Jason Adams and Jeff Phillips are two of them where they had the front cover of the mag and the back cover of the mag.
On the same issue.
Yeah, same issue.
I know I'm on the back of Tim's cover.
Oh, really?
Like an SMA on the back, on the back of that one.
So you mentioned the Chris Sen Skater of the Year thing. Was that a controversial thing?
Not between Chris, like Tim, super nice guy. I feel like, you know, everybody got along. I don't know if everybody got along with Chris, but I definitely did. And like, we were always friends and he never brought that up to me. And I didn't really ever... whatever, I was probably so enamored with myself making the cover that I never really even like paid attention to the fact that I was like taking Chris's shine, you know, that he should. I don't know how many people have missed. Is that the only
dude? Because I, you know, working at Thrasher, like I hear some shit. And one of the things Jake said over and over, he must have had a little beef with Chris or something. But he's like, only skater of the year to not get a cover. Like that was always a thing. And yeah. I didn't realize you're the one that had the cover that month, but you know, Jake always gets digs on everyone, but on this, it seemed like a little bit more for Chris. So I don't know if there was some personal thing or whatever. And Chris is so mellow. He's probably like, I don't give a fuck. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's dude, Chris is the homie. Like he's just down for the cause. So it was like,
we were already like sort of friends by then. And like later throughout the years, I think we're even like better friends and that never even like came up, you know? Mm.
Yeah. Like, I don't think so. I think it probably was more like between Jake and Bryce maybe, or something like behind the scenes stuff or whatever.
I don't think I would have taken the 5 a.m. bus if he hadn't said like, I'm cover. Pretty, it was like the word cover was like said to me before. Like, it's funny. Like if I had been to like him and I was like, I'm going to do this thing. And he's like, well, cool, you do that, you might get the cover. No, I was like, come over and like, we're going to, shoot a cover tomorrow. I was like, you know.
I bet it was probably like on deadline. Like they're like, fuck, we need a cover. So, you know, when he mentions it like that, it's probably like, we need one so bad. I got to give this guy some incentive to make sure, like, who knows? That'd be a question for Bryce, but that's really cool. I mean, that's such an honor to have a cover of Thrasher. It's like, people that get them, they're always like, I mean, Alyssa just got her first cover this month ever for Thrasher. And, wow. And I mean, she's the greatest of all time, right? For ladies and one of the greatest just period. So it's, you never know. There's a lot of people that like Grosso didn't get a cover till he was passed. Like it's a really privileged thing to have a cover. And I think, yeah, those are things that maybe people take for granted nowadays because of such media blitzes and everything. But I think like the people that have been around for a long time realize that like there's a lot that goes into it. Like you might be doing the gnarliest trick, but the photo might not be well or vice versa. And, you know, I've seen so many like that's the cover because of the move, but then the photo doesn't really translate. And whatever. Talk to the butcher about it. He went for the cover like five times. He's like, I'm going for it, dude. And then
he tried the gnarliest thing. Where it's like,
he only had that double set that was a think ad, and he was just like, fuck.
The car I jumped was like this tiny European thing that was like, I jumped over the hood. It wasn't, it's from a jump ramp. The jump ramp's on the curb, on the sidewalk too, makes it even easier. And it was just, I was just like,
it's kind of similar. Like Wade Spire had a similar cover where he's doing it off, like, I think a cement kicker, maybe like a sidewalk kicker or something, but he's got like a tuck knee, like just little air in the streets.
Yeah. One other thing about the cover is I had it the month after Strubing got his. Justin Strubing had the cover, and then I got the month after too.
Oh, so back to back.
Boulder Creek, Scotts Valley, back to back.
Damn, that rips.
Holy crap, I remember that.
Hell yeah, there's a party at Skateworks that week.
I can't remember like whatever from like NHS for the sponsors. It was like, I don't know if it was a 1,000 per logo or something like that, but it was like I was stoked. I liked the stickers I got or whatever. Full Skatework sticker on there. Jason got me a bottle of Crown Royale and we drank it.
Nice. Oh, dude, that's cool. Was that like one of the bigger months for, like, were you getting paid board royalties most of your time as a pro?
It would be like,
or was there like just a minimum, or like, was there just
I had like a minimum. I want to say my minimum was somewhere between like 1,000 and 1,300, maybe 1,250 was like the most the minimum ever was. Just for board. And then usually I had like, you know, anywhere between 100 and 200 for wheels, 100 and 200 for trucks. And then most of that was coming from NHS. But then, you know, rode for Absolute and Circuit, did have some outside wheel stuff. Ezekiel clothing
too. Oh yeah, that's right.
They had a logo that was like the Olympics rings, and that's like on that board.
What was the one Tim had that had like kind of the bird graphic?
He was super into birds.
Wasn't it a clothing company that was maybe out of Sessions or something, like
Esty?
Esty, yeah.
Which it was E-S-T-E. That name originally came from S and T because it was Salman and Tim.
Oh.
It was their clothing company through Sessions.
Mind blowing.
I like knowing these little things.
He loved birds and like ibises, you know, like that kind of thing. I saw one like next to me the other day or whatever, and it was like, Tim must be watching.
You ever see or talk to his girlfriend? I forget her name, but she used to. Yeah, they used to come to our ramp all the time. Her, him, and Jason, and she would just kick in. She was super cool.
Yep. Of course. Like, yeah, being good friends with him. Like, as soon as I think I was even there for his like 19th birthday party, you know, like we really like became like, even though like I just met him that year, like we were like hanging out like all the time. And like, I always thought like I was going to move to San Jose, but I would live close enough. And like, we would spend so much time on tour and stuff, or he'd come over here that I never really did. Would hang out with Karina and Jai a ton, and Jason Adams, of course.
I love the movie North Shore.
Yeah, good people.
Crazy Eddie would always be around.
Oh, yeah.
Lance Delgado.
Yeah. He was wicked fresh.
Often like Kendall would be there doing whatever. So Kendall was also my team manager as well.
Okay.
Jeff and Jeff Kendall have been my team managers. That's pretty insane.
So my Magic Mind experience is coming to an end at the end of January here. And also what's coming to the end is their offer. So I strongly suggest, if you're interested at all, dive in before February 1st. And remember, www.magicmind.com/Jan Schmidt, and the code is Schmidt20, and you're going to get like 75% off.
Schmidt20.
So if you're trying to get some focus and get out on them streets early before the sun comes up and have just more of a level day instead of spiking up and down constantly from sugar or caffeine or any of that stuff. Magic Mind is the ticket. M-A-G-I to the C. M-I-N to the
mother
D. Get there while you can. You know what I mean?
Doesn't automatically mean you'll be going to Super Bowl.
Bang, bang, Niner gang.
Hi there, interworld of webs, cast, podding. This is Cranny. You're listening to Schmidt Talk. Talking Schmidt. Talk some Schmidt. Put it in your ear hole. Find out about your world.
Like, did you ever kind of in the back of your mind, you're like, I want to do this for as long as I can. Like, if my career is over as a pro, I'm going to move into the, you know, start doing stuff behind the scenes. You know, you eventually are working with Crux and probably doing a bunch of product developing and stuff with all the different things that are going. But moving backwards, like when you're just a pro skater, are you thinking, because NHS kind of runs like a family, like a lot of those guys have worked their way through it in different ways. Are you thinking about like, this is my career?
I actually thought, well, man, that's crazy. I've been thinking about this. I've been doing some writing lately, and I was thinking about how as soon as I turned pro, well, even before you ever turned pro, first of all, people are telling you, you're never going to be pro, or you can't skate forever, or any of those things, right?
Yeah.
And then as soon as you're pro, it's like, hey, you know, this isn't going to last long, right? And then so, like, it's funny because I, you know, felt like by the time I'm like 25, I felt like grizzled, you know, and like worried about that. And also thinking, you know, I thought I would do something else. I didn't think I was going to work at NHS. So I didn't think as far as that avenue.
Okay.
Kendall really looked out for me and he gave me the opportunity to be Crux team manager while I was still pro.
Ah.
I think I did that for like 6 months, but was still skating well enough or like had enough going on to where I was like, hey, I think I'm going to just go back to focusing on just being pro. And he really looked out for me and was like, hey, just so you know, when, you know, this will be there for you when you're done. You know, I don't know if he said it just like that, but made me feel like it wasn't an impossibility to go back to that.
Okay.
And then, so that was, you know, I was no longer pro. That offer was there except for to team and brand manage.
What's the biggest difference from Jeff Kendall, the skater / team manager, to Jeff Kendall, the, what is he, he's like CEO now, or what is he?
Yeah, he's the guy.
Yeah.
The difference wasn't like immediate, you know? When we were on tour, that was another thing. So like, he is like, we get to see a lot of talented skateboarders, right? That's what I was saying, like seeing Roskop in, not even in his element, like past even like giving a shit, just kind of like, hey, I'm going to skate with you guys this mini ramp and just blow me away. Same thing with Kendall. Like, it's like, damn, like, that's how you do it. Like, you don't, like, I grew up skating ramps, mini ramps and stuff all the time. Did a million Smith grinds, have 100 homies who can do Smith grinds. We can all do good Smith grinds, whatever. And then I skate some mini ramp and he's just like there with us and like, well, whatever, I'll take a run. And like Smith sits from end to end and it's locked in. And it's like, I was like, oh, see, like, man, like from top to bottom, like you're holding your body in like a pose, like true, like professionalism from like top to bottom. Like not only like, you don't just do a Smith, like present the best Smith anybody will ever have seen in their life.
Yeah.
Like how he skated.
I remember seeing him at SJ Warehouse. We were talking about Kendall today for some reason. Oh, because I work with Kevin Bronze, my side guy.
Shout out.
He works next to me in my office, and we're having a great time. I love that guy. I didn't really know him till this, but we were talking about Kendall. I was like, dude, that dude used to rip the SJ Warehouse. Like, he was one of the first people I saw doing a no-handed, like he would try 360 or 540 on the mini ramp. Not grabbing, you know, like he was like pushing along with the push of anything that was going in those days. I never really saw him skate vert. I just saw him skate that spine ramp, and Like, he was one of the guys that you were stoked to see skate that thing.
When fast forwarding to the cannery now, when he maybe has that bass cat board and doesn't really like his pro career is ending for Santa Cruz and he's working as our team manager or whatever.
Yeah.
Helping me out with stuff. Like, he would still skate with us at like lunchtimes in there. And I saw him do a kickflip backside nose blunt on the quarter pipe.
Damn.
Which I had never seen anybody do in real life until that point. I think somebody had done it, but I saw him do one like nice. I saw him learn like switch 360 flips on flat, do like a, it was either nose wheelie, nollie heel, or like nollie heel manual, and like learn it really quick. And I was just being like, dude, just kind of screwing around over here. Like, you're so good at street even.
Tricks are for kids. I don't do tricks. I just roll.
Yeah. It's sick for you guys to have that facility, man. And like the little zone outside where you got the curbs and stuff, like having those breaks and stuff. I've been trying to get Tony to repave our parking lot so we can have a few obstacles to skate around on.
That's what we need too. That's the problem, is our parking lot is super rough.
Yeah, ours is mangled. There's no way. Dude, we got to talk about your first time to China. I just remember that. Being like the tall guy and wasn't everybody trying to touch you? Like, they couldn't even believe it.
We went to Hong Kong and Shenzhen in 2003.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was before Shanghai was like the new Barcelona or whatever. We just went there because I want to say it was the beginning. Anthony Clairval, you know, reached out to somebody, and then so we went out there. And then the Crux people, so I think Caswell was out there with us, maybe Louis. And then it was also Windsor James's first Crux trip because he rode for Crux. Man, we're all getting on, we're all in like the line at the airport in customs or whatever. It's like an hour long thing. We finally get to the front. I was like, oh my God, thank God. And have all this stuff. And everybody's like pulling out their passports. And I was like, I left my passport at home.
Ooh.
And so I was like, I'm going to go home and I'll probably see you guys tomorrow because I'm missing this flight. Because, right. And then the one I get on the next day, Windsor had done exactly the same thing. So we flew together.
Oh, wow.
And we show up in Hong Kong together. And every, like, first, like, anywhere me and him went, because this was like Windsor when he was in the really big pressed jeans, you know, like creased them, like gigantic 50 cent gear, right?
Yeah.
And then me, I think I didn't have a mohawk or anything, but I was probably like dressing a little weird. And just between the two of us, everybody would just stop what they were doing and just like, and so that was, it was, Shenzhen didn't have like all paved roads yet. There was still a bunch of spots, but it was new. And like you said, they're, at nighttime, we would go whatever we were going to do, go shopping or go get food. And we'd be walking down the main street and all of a sudden people would just start following us. And it would be a big crowd like walking with us, like we were like an entourage. And they would start getting closer and closer and closer to what you've started to feel like you were like getting boxed in and whatever. I'd been probably pretty drunk at the time. And I can like roar really loud, like I can even make like, I can't do it right now, but like just like a rough one, especially if I'm drunk. So every now and again I would wait until they all just got super close and just like try and just do like the biggest Hulk scream I can, and it was like dropping like dish soap in oil. They would just like, everybody would just blow apart and just run away from us. And we keep walking down the street and they'd slowly start doing it again and boxing us in. And I think that's like, yeah, Louis might call me Ronzilla and Caswell.
That's amazing. Ronzilla. You need that graphic.
I think Haslam was on that trip. There was a bunch of people that weren't on Crux that we were with. Haslam was there. Flo and Alex Carolino were there, like when they were like at their best too. It was such a fun trip.
That rips. Is Crux still going?
Crux is still going. So I ran it for 17 years.
Yeah. Right?
Whatever, 2002 to 2019. And then after that, Alex White came in and took over for me. Yep. And, you know, I've moved on to other things.
Oh.
And then now she doesn't work there anymore, but Crux is still kicking. And we're kind of like team effort gonna, you know, there's not one specific brand manager just yet. I think I might be helping out with that too. And I still ride Crux and like definitely want to be a part of like helping it exist.
Man of many hats.
Yeah. Mostly video content stuff lately for our products.
Okay.
But yeah, we've all been kind of talking about that, like who's going to kind of like, you know, where Crux is going right now. And
you know,
I mean, always be that, I mean, I'm pretty sure it'll always be the vibe of what it is, like the fun truck company.
Right. But, yeah. I wonder if we're ever going to see the IKP again.
I get one more shinner. I'm go berserk.
Dolphin flips. How do they work?
I don't know if I'll be able to get Joel into face paint. It sucks wearing face paint.
Who is that guy? Who's the other guy?
That's Joel Ellis, and he's one of our leaders in the sales department.
Oh, he works there too.
I think he's heads domestic sales at NHS.
Who came up with that idea? Was that your idea?
That was, yeah, because we'd seen, man, this is like before YouTube. Remember like the Insane Clown Posse made that miracle?
Yeah, yeah. Gravity, how the fuck does that work?
Yeah. So we just were all watching that in the office. And at the time I was hanging out with Joel and my friend Larson, who works there in our web department. Joe Perrin is already like working with us, making all the video stuff.
Mm.
And we had a mirror truck coming out, or it was that shiny chrome one, but we called them mirrors because they were so shiny. They were like reflective, like looked like a mirror.
Right.
And somehow it was just like, whenever I would see, I mean, was one of the funnest things about making Crux commercials is often it would just be like, see something you think is funny and how can we turn this into a Crux commercial?
Sure.
And so it was like, damn, what can we do something like that for Crux? Because we realized it was all CGI. I was like, man, if we green screen this, can we do like all of this? And it's like, they're on that platform. I was like, what if that was like on the truck? And within like, I don't know, like probably a half hour, we had probably like 90% of the commercial, you know,
the lyrics, not
the lyrics, but just the idea of what it would be. And like, well, should we go ahead and try and make this? And then I just took the lyrics, whatever, found them online, and then just rewrote them from like a about what I was trying to market, like a marketing perspective. And then we kind of like thought between myself being like the skinny one and Joel being kind of like a bigger guy, like the two of us would kind of look like those dudes. And I asked Joel and he was like, sure, whatever. And then we made two of those videos. And after the second one, like a whole day of like, because we made, you know, music videos for him. So it would take like a full day of being in that stuff.
In that, yeah.
And as fun as it was, like, yeah, I don't know, maybe we'd have to pay him.
If it's the right situation. Kevin couldn't even believe it. I was telling him about it. I don't like to say lies, so I stretch the truth. And he's getting used to like, is this real or not real? And I was like, no, dude, this is real. And I was like, I'm going to send you the link. And his bio was just blown. He didn't know about it at all.
You just influenced somebody.
A lot of our best Crux commercials, unfortunately, probably came out before YouTube was like solid. So like that one even is like, we did a lot that were for Fuel TV. You know, like a lot of the good ones with Colt Cannon and Cairo.
There's a Cairo one. I couldn't remember what it was, but I remember. Oh yeah,
the handstand board slide at the Buster rail.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Shout out to Eric Noren. Before Joe came in, who did our IKP stuff, Eric Noren was our director and producer for all those, like the one with Colt Cannon and the explosions on the beach.
Yeah.
Fake perfume one. The one with Cairo, we had to rent two cherry pickers to have the cables.
Yeah.
The wire crew that held him up worked on Willow. All these, like, they're like legit wire film, like actual like film, real film team that does like wire work for movies. They probably did like, I want to say maybe Crouching, they might have done some Crouching Tiger
stuff. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So he got a permit to have that school for the day. He knew all these other people that worked in the film industry that would do it for free because they wanted to have this on their reel. Like, oh, I was the so-and-so, you know, I was...
right, the key
for the commercial. Yeah, exactly. For this commercial with, you know...
Yeah.
We'd have like craft tables and like all this stuff, and it was like legit commercial things. And whatever, they were still expensive for NHS, but like it was in between getting so much extra from him on the film production side.
Ah.
You know, me being willing to just like put all the budget into it and into some dumb, you know, making it silly. And it was really fun. Like Colt Cannon, like such a good sport. Like he's in a few of them, was just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, Colt didn't care. He's the best. He's just like down for the... I mean, that's what's kind of cool about the squad, right? It's like everybody kind of has that... I mean, Louis's a fun, like, let's try to fucking do some weird shit. And like, so you're always trying to be creative, which is, isn't that what skateboarding's about?
And like, that was... So as soon as I took over Crux from Matt Sharkey, I think actually Kendall at some point ran Crux, and I think Sharkey took it over from him. And when Sharkey took it over, he was like, I'm changing it. It's no longer like this tech truck company. It's the fun truck company. And it's all about like humor and not taking yourself seriously.
Uh-huh.
And so he put on Louis. Well, no, Louis, I think Louis already rode for Crux, but he put on Caswell and Colt and just really like started that whole direction of like, this company can't take itself seriously and never will. And so having those people that kind of like fit that.
Yeah.
It's always been hard to find. It's one of the reasons like Louis and Caswell are still like.
They're staples.
Yeah. Yeah. They're still like the most Crux because it's hard to find people that like have that, you know, kind of like carefreeness or like love for skateboarding, but don't like take themselves too seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they're super good.
Well, winding down, sorry I'm taking a lot of your time, but I got just a couple more things. The Santa Cruz trip to the ballpark here, were you a part of that?
Yep. Yeah, I was stoked. That was super fun.
What was that like? Because we did one with Trujillo and Vans, and they didn't let us skate in certain parts. And then I've also gone there and did like an OJ thing with Jason and Cranny. And there was certain restrictions, but it seemed like you guys had like almost carte blanche. Like you guys were skating the rails there and stuff, right?
Yeah, they let us. I think part of it was a little like naivete as far as like, oh yeah, we're just going to wipe that off when you're done. And we're like, oh, you're going to have to like buff that thing, you know?
Yeah.
You might need a sander or whatever. So
is that through Andy Kuno though?
I think so. Yeah. Eric Palzolo hit me up to be like, asked me if I wanted to, I guess they were looking for people who at least, you know, if they didn't live in SF were Bay Area people. So it was me, Eman and Nibs. And I was super psyched to get like invited on that one. And so they had a Zoom meeting the day before. We're like, we're going to do a little walkthrough. And they were talking about all the things that like they planned us to skate. And, you know, we ended up skating like three or four of them. But one of them was like, they wanted us to skate along the top of the dugout. And in my head, I was like, oh my God, I'm doing something on top of that dugout. I don't, you know, I'm doing the no comply flip on top of the dugout is what I'm planning, right? I was like, yeah. Whatever happens, I'm doing that. And then when we got there, there was like, yeah, we talked to some people that might not be like... sound for it. And that was the only thing that they took off the list.
Oh. So
we'd already planned to skate that like condiment table, the railings on the back of the on the back of the seats in that section over there.
Yeah, the bleachers.
Which is my my screensaver is doing the board slide on that thing.
Is that right in front of the Coke bottle?
Yeah.
Sick.
as soon as we actually got to like start skating, you know, a lot of it was planned that we, you know, our mascot and their mascot, it was a full script. So we had to do the whole thing. But like, as far as when it came to skating, it kind of were just like, we never got told like, hey, don't touch that. Don't skate that. And we immediately get to start just cooking through the hallways, like pushing as fast as you can. And we have the whole place to ourselves, even though that place is like union upon union structured in so many different ways, like so many different like people running this like major thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just like invited in and involved in it. But like, that was like, it was such an amazing fun day.
I'm hyped because they just hired this guy, Pat Burrell. I don't know if you know who he is, but he's an ex-Giants baseball player, and he's going to be a coach. And he grew up in Boulder Creek with Justin.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't know that name. No way, that's a trip.
Yeah, so I was like, Justin, that's, you got to come up. We got to fucking high-five this dude. It's going to be...
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. I think I've been through Justin before. That's sick.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, so three things. These are things that I'm going to call the greatest, but it's actually just the first thing that comes to your head, because we can't call anything the greatest or the best because we've had a lot of great. So the first one being Santa Cruz graphic.
Sal, witch doctor.
Fuck yeah, dude. Yeah.
E-Man has that tattooed on his side. I've always wanted to get that as a tattoo as well.
It's oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Second one, best band you've seen at the Boardwalk?
Berlin.
Ooh.
Metro. Yeah, a couple years in a row. I think one year it was, I forget what her name is, the lead singer, but it was her 50th birthday, and she was like super hyped to be there. I think I went like 3 years in a row. Riding on the Metro, Take My Breath Away from the Top Gun movie.
Is it Sex, I'm a Man?
Yeah, I'm a male.
That's my favorite.
I'm a bumblebee.
I'm a one-night stand, and we make love together.
So she did the backstory on that, and she was like, yeah, so like, I don't know if it was her husband or the guy she was dating at the time. She was like, so I'm going to say this one thing, and then you say this thing. And he was like, I'm just going to say I'm a man because this shit's like too crazy. Like, so she says all this extreme
stuff. I'm a man. It came out so good. It's like, yeah. Okay. This one's the toughest. What were you at? Like, you saw this happen on a skateboard in live. Like, one of the best things you've been there for to see in person.
Damn. Like, 8 flooded into my head. But here, I'll give you this one. 1997 Lausanne, Switzerland contest. It's the one where, man, everybody thinks of it as Tom Penny did the hippie jump where his board goes through the car windows, right? Cool. There's two ramps, a pyramid with a car in between. And he hippie jumps through it, right? And Tyrone Olsen hippie jumps. They did it 2 in a row, right? Tyrone was the first person to, he was trying it for like a half hour and coming so close and just slamming, slamming, slamming. I don't think Tom did it first try by any means or whatever, but Tom came through and then all of a sudden does it. And it was like, oh damn, that's fucked up. Like Tyrone's not going to do it. And Tyrone just did it right after him. And it was just like, everybody was so happy. I remember like standing with Israel and I was like, dude, let's go over there so we can be standing where we see the boards. Like we're looking at the board shooting through at us, because they would jump off the ramp and they had no idea if their board was even going to come out the other window, let alone straight. So there was so many times like Tyrone or even Tom would like land on it and it would be twisted like the backside way and they would just slam, and or it would just wouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And then so after all those tries, like Tyrone did a ton of tries and it was like Tom did it first and it was like, damn, you're going to take it like that? And then Tyrone did it right after and it was just like skate god moment right there.
Fuck yeah, that's sick. Dude, thank you so much for taking the time, man. I really appreciate it. It's good talking to you, catching up personally, and then hearing your stories, you know. And I always try, like, sometimes people don't like it, but I don't care. This is my shit. So I like giving shine to Jaya and Tim Brock and Phil Shao and Preston and Jake and the people that aren't with us anymore. We had some amazing times with those people. And when I can get together with someone like yourself that shared times with them, it's like we can talk about some stuff and give shine to, you know, these guys are dear with our hearts forever. And like, that's for sure. So, and I know you were tight with those guys. So I appreciate hearing like, you know, your relationship with Tim Brock and stuff. And then that Jaya Bondaroff, anytime anyone says best ever Slick, I'm like, Jaya, I don't even think. I'm like, it was so good.
Corey Chrysler, Nick Foster, Billy Strubing,
right.
Kit, all that time.
Yeah.
Sick. Thank you for having me on here, man. Good times.
Hell yeah. Big love, man. Hopefully I'll see you in real life.
Yes. Come on down, or I'll be up there soon for sure. Well, you know, when you come down, the first place you got to go is Derby.
Hell yeah. Get out of there after that one.
Derby for Preston.
Hell yeah. No, Derby all day. Hell yeah. And I want to go to the pump tracks. Well, hell yeah, dude. Good to see you. Take care of yourself.
You too, buddy. Love you, man.
Peace. Niner gang. Bang, bang, Niner gang. Blood Wizard.
BloodWizard.com. Tickety-tack.
Hey, it's Corey at Blue Plate, 3218 Mission Street. Come see us. Meatloaf, fried chicken, deviled eggs, Dollar Olympia beers. We're here every day of the week. We got a garden and we got smiles on our faces. Come let us make you happy.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking Schmidt. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. When you subscribe, you'll get notifications every Tuesday of new episodes the minute they become available. Also, please leave reviews and a 5-star rating. It's the best way to help the show grow. All of the episodes will always remain free, but if you would like to help support the show, you can do so at talkingschmidt.com. Where you can pick up some merchandise like t-shirts, beanies, hats, and stickers. The website has an entire archive of all of the episodes, with extra photos and videos. Email us with any suggestions, comments, or ways that the show may have improved your life at talkingschmidt@gmail.com. All interviews are conducted, edited, and produced by Schmitty. The intro music is Mary's Cross by the band Nature. A very special shout out goes to the executive director, Cheryl Camisa.
Shout out.
Love it!
This is Talking Schmidt, where the Rolodex is deep, but the conversation is deeper.
Keep the wheels greased.